Association is conducted weekly at 9 p.m. on Thursdays on the 14679 repeater in Paramus, New Jersey, which is owned and operated by the Bergen County FM Association, to which we extend our thanks and appreciation for the use of the repeater for this net. At this time, we are looking for questions, technical topics, and, you know, things that puzzle you. There are many wonderful things in this wonderful amateur radio hobby of ours that can be puzzlement, momentary or long in standing. And we'd like to give you the opportunity to register those puzzlements and dispense with them. And by dispensing with them, by consulting with the fine technical members of our group and those who might be listening. You need not be a member of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association to participate. Actually, we welcome all licensed radio amateurs who have 2-meter privileges to join us. And so the check-in procedure is fairly simple. It consists of your call sign, your name, and, of course, the topic of your question or phrase, no question. So we will start with anyone with an N call. Anybody with an N call, please call K2BAR for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net.
MS2K, Jim, and no question at this point.
MS2K acknowledged. Anybody else with an N call, please call K2BAR.
I think I doubled. NJ1W, Dave, no question.
Good evening, Dave. Good hearing you. Anybody else? Any further N calls, please call K2BAR. Okay, we'll go on to alpha calls. Any alpha calls, please call K2BAR.
How about heritage calls?
K2ZO, do you have a question?
No, but I have a heritage call.
Yeah. Heritage call. We'll ask you to explain the heritage call later. That sounds like a topic that is worthy of at least a moment or two of banter. Okay, anybody with a whiskey, a W call, please call K2BAR. Wow. Okay, and finally, other than K2ZO, are there any kilo calls? Please call K2BAR.
KC2AWX, the name's Harvey in beautiful Fairlawn, New Jersey.
Good evening, Harvey. I got you. Anybody else? Any amateur wishing to check in at this time who has not checked in, please call K2BAR.
KA2BDU, Helmut.
Good evening, Helmut. Nice to see you last weekend and hear you tonight. Anybody else? Okay, well, I think we will begin. The first topic of the evening is, I think, the question of the heritage call. I'm going to turn it over to K2ZO with that provocative opportunity space for him to fill from K2BAR.
Okay.
K2BAR. K2ZO. A heritage call is different than a vanity call, but it's a call that you applied for. And the way it worked was you applied for the call at a time when they didn't charge and they didn't call it vanity. I think they were getting ready to start to call it that. But anyway, what it is, it's a call that the FCC has issued, just like a regular call. But it was a gift, it was an ask for. It's never been issued before. And in 1976, when I was eligible after being a extra class 15 years in Army, that's what I got. Back to that.
Okay, so it's the predecessor request your call sign program. Now, you made a point that was a little bit tricky in between. Must a heritage call be previously unissued, or could it be a reissue?
No, it could be a reissue. I think it could. I think they classified the reissues in there. But in this case, it was not. Initially, the way it worked was if you were licensed and had an extra class license and were licensed for 25 years, you could request a two-letter call. And I did not come under that thing. But then I came in the second phase, which was the 15 years and an extra class license in 1976, I guess.
Very fine. That's very good. I remember that program very well, having been licensed in 75 and all the fun and games that went with that. One of my college classmates was Mike Kaczynski, W1 Oscar Delta, and I always thought that was an interesting selection of calls, but we won't go there. Anyway, my other topic of immediate import would be, does anybody have any questions regarding the things that they saw over the weekend? I mean, several of us actually, every one of us had something there to present, I think. Well, maybe not Harvey, but that's okay. And Harvey, I'm going to get to you later with your 10-meter thing, so hang on. But I'm kind of curious if anybody has any follow-up questions regarding the things that were shown at the show-and-tell night on Sunday night. Are there any follow-on questions that might be of interest to everybody?
WI2W.
Now, there's a question from Sunday night. WI2W, Steve, good evening, and you have a question.
My question is to Helmut. Once again, I was fascinated to see your submarine for the second time, the first time at Kidnight. I would like to know when you're going to launch it in a pond, and I think we should have a Barra event, and we'll bring swimsuits and snorkels and masks so that we can observe the fun underwater as well. So my question is for Helmut, when the first launch is going to be, and would you please invite your Barra buddies to participate?
KA2BDU. First of all, I want to make sure that my emergency locator works, and I guess if I activate it, and a few minutes later I see a military helicopter overhead, then I guess the thing will work. Would you gentlemen agree?
I would agree. Steve?
I would agree, and I'm not so sure I want to see their faces when you figure out what it is they've been called to see. You would have a lot of questions to answer to a lot of people with very dark suits and no name badges. You forgot the poor attitude.
I will let you know, KA2BDU.
Thanks, Helmut.
I have something about that. Suggestion. Perhaps we could do something combined with the Fairlawn Club in a certain sand-filled, water-filled pit in Fairlawn. It's just a thought. They have a swimming location where they do the the fireworks, and maybe if there was an evening where the facility is closed to the public, the Fairlawn Club could request use of the facilities for this unusual demonstration. And of course, people would come with their bathing suits in order to help retrieve the submarine, heaven forbid. But it would be in a confined space, and, you know, it would be a controllable pond, because I don't believe it's that deep. And ultimately, it's recoverable because they do drain it. There is that, too. It could also be used for a lost bather drill if someone wanted to turn that into a turtle, if you will, and recover it that way. But that might be something to think about. You know, Jim, I'll leave that to you and Gene to sort out with Helmet, okay? MS2KWTTT. I'm sorry, I wasn't clear as to which Jim.
Okay, yes. Not sure how much of a how much pull I have in Fairlawn, but anyway, I understand that that's a subject that has taken a sudden change for the better. But who knows? It's a possibility. I think Helmut has a location. It's even a little more closely confined, and where he may do his first attempts. Well, besides the bathtub, but I'm sure we're more than happy to contribute what little we might to any such enterprise. NS2K.
Okay, very fine. I think the submarine demo would be just awesome. The other question I had was... Well, first of all, before I go on to another subject, does anybody have any more subjects, either about the submarine or other things they saw Sunday night? Please call now, W2, probably K2BAR. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Harvey, you tell us your adventures of your 10-meter antenna and its resolution, if you will, and its newfound performance, and maybe some others can comment on it for having worked you on it. And if you could talk about its orientation and what your plans are for additional antenna for that band, I think that might be something worthwhile here. KC2AWX from K2BAR.
K2BAR, KC2AWX. Well, Andrew came over with his, let me drop it for a second. Andrew came over with his antenna analyzer, and we checked SWR on the antenna, and it's right on the money, 1.1. And we raised the antenna up about 3.5 feet in a tree, and now it's just a little over my garage, so it works. And it goes north and south, so I want to make another antenna that will go east and west across my yard, and have a antenna, I don't know what you call it, a switch, to go from one antenna to another to the radio. So that should be interesting.
and we were listening to on 10 meters to some people in Arizona with a K-5 call talking to people in California and in Oregon. We could hear them, but they couldn't hear us. And that was fun. Now, I got a question to ask someone. I want to try PSK-31 on 10 meters. My antenna is cut for 28.4. Would I need a antenna tuner to bring it down to PSK-31 frequency? KC2AWX.
Someone wish to answer that question? Okay, so what frequency is it cut for now, and what frequency do you want to operate?
Oh, this is NJ1W.
Go ahead, Dave.
He says he's at 28.4. PSK frequency on 10 meters is 28.120.15. I think coming down that little bit isn't going to make that much difference in his SWR. I think he should be able to run, quite well without having to tune it. He's at 1.1 to 1 down.
Okay, so Harvey, you're going to go down from 400 to 140 to 150, so that's like 250 kilohertz. I don't think that's going to be a big deal at all. That'll work just fine. Do you have any further questions about doing that? Maybe Dave can help you further.
Well, you guys answered my question. Now I'm happy I can do it. Now I'm going to have to rig blaster or something like that, and the software, and get on and do that. And it's good that you guys are giving us newbies a little Elmer time, and I have to commend you guys on it. And I think you guys did a marvelous job talking the Fairlawn City Fathers into reinstating the radio club. KC2AWX.
Comment.
Good,
dude. Yeah, Harvey, something you can do right now without even getting a rig blaster is connect the output of the speaker on your radio to your sound card input. Your sound card line input, and load up the PSK-31 software, and you can start listening to the QSOs and familiarize yourself with the software and familiarize yourself with how to tune the radio without getting anything. So you can get your feet wet tomorrow if you want, or maybe even tonight.
Good idea. Thank you, sir. And, I'll just say 73s to everyone, because I think the battery's about ready to poop out. And we'll talk to you next Monday night on 10 meters, KC2AWX.
Okay, one couple of things here, Harvey. I don't think any of us had anything to do with Fairlawn Council decided to reverse its earlier decision. But the fact is they have, and I'm sure Gene can tell you in person tomorrow night or anytime you see him in person to what happened with that. And I'm sure it'll be very interesting. I cannot join the group tomorrow night unless I perhaps get done by about 8 o'clock with what I have to do instead of 8:30. If I get done by 8 o'clock, I'll jump in the car with Jeremy and come down. He and I are going to be doing something with some younger scouts, and it'll be fine. We're all set up for Saturday, by the way. We're getting excited about that. The scout show and various ham radio demos. And, well, we brought all sorts of things. We brought our CPR dummies, GPSs, first aid, really cool first aid stuff, and some cool stoves and lanterns. We decided to do all the gadgets of our scout troop, which is pretty extensive, actually. We're kind of gadget freaks. Anyway, so you'll have a directional antenna system, Harvey. I think that's great. I'm kind of curious, Harvey, if you don't mind, how high is your current antenna on 10 meters?
I would say more or less about 14 feet, something like that. And Andrew had a good time helping me get the antenna up. We put a nylon cord on the center of the insulating, insulator. It's got a ring on top. We tied a cord on there. And he had a sock, and we put a couple of rocks in it, tied the cord on there, and threw it up in the tree, and hoisted the antenna that way. And we tied it to the tree. So, it's simple, it's efficient, and it works. And it cost me altogether about $6-$7 to build and all. And I think you guys could do us a big favor, all the new guys. Publish the type of antenna that we could use. Publish it in the Bear Bulletin. That would be nice. KC2AWX.
Well, Harvey, that's a great idea, and I know that the 10-meter antenna design you're using comes from an AWRL published design, so maybe you could, give one of us a hint as to how we could do that, or where we could find it, and we probably can scrape up that design for or some variant of that for the Barrow Bulletin, and that'd be a good idea. So you'd like to see more technical things in the Barrow Bulletin, and that's interesting. Take that one away. I had an interesting observation. Speaking of PSK-31, I've only operated PSK-31 once, and that was when I was at NN3SI, which is the Smithsonian radio station, which is currently mothballed until they finish their remodeling for the next year or two. And, you know, when you tune with a mouse, because you're looking at a panoramic display, a hunk of spectrum, if you will, and you're looking at little spikes of activity, or in this case, waterfalls of activity. I got thinking about that during yesterday's 6-meter opening because, you know, the band was crowded and there was all sorts of stuff. And as the band faded, it would sometimes peak in specific directions. And, you know, I was looking at the ICOM 756 Pro 3 display. I had those spikes, and I had a mouse in my hand because I was logging with the computer, but I didn't have it fully integrated. And I found myself, you know, for the first time, wanting to tune with the mouse. I never thought I would have that urge to, if you will, do search and pounce with a mouse at a panoramic display, but there I found myself with the urge to do it. I actually moved the mouse several times in the course of several hours in that direction, and then of course it was fruitless and pointless, but it does beg the question that, you know, I never suspected I would reflexively want to do that. So, you know, I guess even old dogs can learn new tricks. I guess that's my message here. I'll drop it. So, I'm kind of curious if anyone had any, I mean, Harvey mentioned some 10-meter stations he heard. I'm wondering if anyone Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday had any good 10 or 6-meter contacts. I heard quite a bit. I heard that Hawaii was into the southeast day before yesterday, which is very cool. But I'm kind of curious if anyone had any experiences on 6 meters or 10 meters in the last couple of days. Please call K2BAR.
W2AKR repeater.
Okay. And the other question I had was, you know, there was a very interesting mixture of propagation. Because of the tropical storm, Andrea, that is off the, or was off the Florida coast the last couple of days, it caused some interesting variations to the normal ionospheric propagation. You had a certain amount of lower atmosphere ducting that would either attenuate or accentuate or, the quality of the signal. And I noticed that yesterday, very pronounced. It was very pronounced at times. And it also provided propagation. When the band got short, it intermittently, as a band of high and low pressure would meet each other and pass over the coast, it would actually extend like a thermal duct, if you will, like an extension of the ionospheric ducting that had gone short. And so it was very interesting to listen to that propagation mode. So you had a combination of propagation modes extending your signal down the coast and elsewhere. It was kind of neat. At this time, I'll look for comments on that and any check-ins that might be of interest at this time. Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, KS2AD.
Check-in. No questions, no comments. Sorry I'm late.
Okay, I got Ben, KF2ID, and Tony, K2AMI. No problem. The net was, at 1 minute of nine, it was postponed by 2 minutes, so I could run up the stairs. Oh, dear me. That's when I got home. Anyway, so, Tony, I did speak with OCX, was it?
Yeah,
earlier, and we talked about using 146.535 as a simplex among the amateurs on the site for quickie demos and such like that on Saturday, if that's agreeable. But, you know, you might want to pass that along. I haven't had a chance to get with Phil because last night I dumped my soda into my work computer, and that's where his email address is for work, so kind of knocked out of the water today. The whole day was spent trying to get a replacement computer, which I didn't get, but it's another matter. It did up for repair. Anyway, any comments about the extended type of propagation? Has anyone else had combination of propagation modes combining to create either an interesting effect or an extended coverage that would otherwise not normally be found? Has anyone ever had experience like that? Not any band for that matter. Please call K2BAR. Okay. Well, it's not uncommon to have weather anomalies extend the propagation that you'll get elsewhere, like through a duct of some sort, thermal duct, as it were. I've also heard some odd auroral enhancement of other propagation modes, in particular tropoducting and some other ionospheric enhancements. Kind of neat, because you either get the buzzy sound of aurora or you don't get a signal at all, and you know you're far beyond the auroral propagation capability, let's say 1,500 or 1,800 miles. So it's kind of neat. In any case, let's see, what else did I want to mention? We covered, just for those who are late, that we covered Harvey's 10-meter dipole that is up and working, and he's going to flip another one 90 degrees to it to provide bidirectional coverage, or north-south and east-west coverage. He had a question about using, getting on PSK-31. Would he have to retune the antenna? The answer was no. And Steve WXW pointed out that he could get start listening just by plugging in the speakerphone or speaker output into a into the line input of his sound card and start using any of the number of programs to get familiar with them and get the receive levels working, which is more than half the battle. And we talked about heritage call signs, if you will, the predecessor to the vanity call signs that Jim got his call sign under. And, of course, a live sub-demo, looking for a place for Helmut to do that, an opportunity so we could all participate and watch. So, any other subjects at this time, please call Q2BAR.
KF2IT, just one comment to sync your output directly into the input of the computer. Computer input is generally a microphone level, and if that's the case, the sync of output is getting higher. So it's a wise idea to put some sort of attenuator between the two. And the output of the computer can run his input to his receiver, and he'd have the PSK31. I don't think you have to go out and buy a sound blaster card at all. If you have an ordinary audio card, the PSK31, it's either one tone or the other, so yeah, I don't think you need a high-performance sound blaster card for it. And he has an audio input and an audio output that will work. I did some work with it, a little bit of PSK31, and that's the way I worked it, and it worked fine. I have another question for you, Gord. Let me drop out. You're going to that Boy Scout meeting tomorrow night. Tomorrow, unfortunately, I won't be able to make it. Or the Boy Scout demonstration rather tomorrow at Liberty State Park. If you get anybody from Fairlawn, any of the spookies in particular from Fairlawn, and they seem to be interested, I wonder if you might mention to them that the Fairlawn Radio Club would be willing to provide instructions for their scout containing merit badges in the communication area. I don't know if you still go one drop. I have been in Boy Scouts myself for many years. And so I don't know what the latest things with them or what their approaches are nowadays. But if they're interested in anything like that, they can come to the radio club and we're certainly willing to help them. As I mentioned before, I had sent letters to them. Including some literature. I think there are two troops in Fairlawn, and I had sent letters to two of them in the past, and even in fact a phone call, and I never got any response, so I felt that they weren't interested in instruction. But if they're down there, then I guess they have some interest. If they're looking at the equipment, I certainly, and at the demonstration, I'm sure they'll get a lot of interest. So while they're there, maybe you can mention something to them, KF2ID.
Okay, then, very fine. Two good points. The Scout Show should be very good, and it's a good opportunity for us to hand out amateur radio literature and other things as well. And then the other point is that your earlier one, that you might get away without a sound interface at all, just a nominal sound card that includes the computer should be enough to transmit and receive. Very often some hum is induced, I think that's the biggest question, and or some DC components confuse the sound card and or the radio, depending on which direction you're going. So I think that's the rationale for it, but I've heard many a story and seen many, a reference to, shall we say, interfaceless PSK31 and similar operations. So, I'm with you. I would try it. I have a sound blaster Pro and a Sound Blaster Pro Plus. I think if I get away without them, hey, that's fine by me. Anyway, no big deal. Anything else on the... Any other comments from anybody or early check-in, please call K2BAR.
WICW.
KC2KIS.
KC2KIS first, and then we'll get to IW, or 2W.
Good evening, Gordon. Coming in late, and to my experience with the Sound Blaster equivalent, I found that the quality of the card is not all that critical to PSK31. I tried running the connectors directly from the radio to the computer, and I was not very successful with that, and eventually I built an interface out of one of the QST magazine articles and the circuit boards available from Far Circuit. I built that, and I was far more successful with that, but that was my 5 cents. KC2KIS back to net.
Yes, any further comments from anybody on the subject?
Yeah, just one comment that most sound cards, at least on desktop PCs, have two inputs. They have a mic input and then they have a line input, which is 1 volt peak to peak. So if you put your radio into the line input and you keep your volume at minimum and then gradually bring it up, you'll be all right. And that's enough to get your feet wet. But if you're going to get serious about it, certainly an interface with some isolation transformers is the way to go. WI2W.
Okay, very fine. And that's similar to what Andrew, I think, ultimately built. That's great. What I was reflecting was, much to my amazement last night, having a panoramic display on the Pro 3, I found myself wanting to tune the radio with my mouth, much like you would with PSK31. I thought that was interesting, how your tuning paradigms can shift on you over time. Because, you know, the radio is narrow and tight enough that you don't hear stuff a couple of kilohertz away. But if you can see it, you want to just quickly check what it is. So I actually found that to be very interesting. I'm more thinking that might find a way to use the mouse, the roller wheel, and the two buttons, and the fact that the roller wheel itself has a button, to do something, such as allow you to QSY, check something, and then click perhaps the right. Or click the left button again or something to go back to your previous frequency, and maybe even stack them, which would be very cool too. Because like the ICOM band stacking register, where you hit the band switch several times and it rolls through the VFOs. Very cool. Anyway, interesting human factors, opportunity spaces, and it's amazing how my exposure to PSK31, however briefly, led me to that natural inclination. The events were separated by about 10 months or 8 months, something like that. Anyway, any other comments, questions, or confusion on the subject?
Yeah, Gordon, you should take a look at Jerry's NOTP's laptop, where he's recorded a piece of the contest in audio form on his laptop, and then he uses the software-defined radio software to play it back, and you can tune around with the mouse and the keys and do everything you've just described. I just caution you, if you do go down that route and have a look, it could be very expensive for you.
You think? Yeah, I know. I don't need another expensive radio. If that happens, something's going to go. as it is, my 897 is on the block because I have six HF radios. I think I'm okay. I think I can get rid of one of them, especially since another one is set up for full portable use in addition to the 897. And then I got some what I call pluggable situations with the 46 Pro. Anyway, that is a good point. Yeah, that is a very cool thing. You can actually do a wideband audio recording, if you will, and then play back that spectrum. 90 kilohertz of it. Pretty cool. On your hard drive. And then play it back later and listen to what you want to. I think that's something that's got my full attention. That'll be my next step, but I'm kind of waiting for things to shake out a bit. Let me drop it. I did notice that the Elecraft K3 I read further on that one this week, and I noted that it either comes assembled and tested, or modules assembled and tested, and you just basically have a solderless kit where you basically put the motive, put the rig together mechanically, plugging in, you know, various electronic modules, hardware elements, etc. You know, physical hardware, you know, like nuts, bolts, knobs, things like that. So it's very cool. It may not be as challenging, but I'm kind of wondering, I want to see where where the K3 crosses the SDR. Right now I don't quite see what I'm looking for, but I think that's going to be, you know, there'll be a point where the two will cross, and feature functionality, etc., and I think that's when I'm going to dive into that. In the meantime, something like my Pro 3 is more than sufficient, and as Butch MN2T has pointed out, well, I have a 940, and I said, you spent more on your 940 in real dollars than I did on my Pro 3, and look how much different it is. And I'm not saying it's a bad radio, I'm just saying that at the time he bought his 940, he probably spent a longer buck for what the value of the dollar was than someone would spend on a Pro 3 today, or similar radios. I'm just not picking on those two radios, but each of their class. It's kind of amazing how technology has driven the cost element of the equation down and the performance up. Anyway, any other check-ins or comments on this, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, WHCAI calling.
Good evening, Thomas. Would you like to add something?
I'm only trying to figure out what you guys are talking about, so I'll be listening. No comments. Over.
Well, you make one more check-in than we had last week, so this is pleasant. Thank you for joining us. We're talking about software-defined radios and or software functionality, the value of the dollar, and how you tune, and all sorts of interesting things. Steve, did you want to elaborate a little bit on how Jerry does that, and you know, what you think? Why do you think it's so potentially expensive?
Well, actually, it doesn't have to be expensive. You can buy a kit for about $12 or $13 with a 40-meter crystal in it, and get a few kilohertz to play with. And the software is free. It's open source, and so you can get your feet wet on the receive side for virtually no money at all. If you want a transmitter, then you can spend the big bucks and spend about $32 and get their version 6.1 TXRX and have a low power 1-watt QRP rig. And again, the software is free. And then if you wanted to go with their high end stuff, well, then you can spend thousands. So, and there's a few companies doing it, not only SDR, but there's several players in the field. So you can jump into software-defined radios for a few dollars, or you can spend upwards of $5,000 with the latest and greatest. So that's about it. But I personally, I'm very excited about the technology. You know, of course, the two factors, time and money, are in the way at the moment, but they will, they'll move over at some point. I think the application that excites me the most for this software-defined radio, let me drop it here. The application that excites me the most is for VHF contesting, where you've got the large band spread, 90 kilohertz on screen, when you're sitting on a 222 or 432 in off-peak hours, and you see a signal pop up, you click the mouse on it and work it, whereas you would just miss that if you're just sitting there calling CQ the rest of the time. So I think it would significantly increase our BARA scores, or at least the potential for our BARA scores, as long as somebody was sitting in front of the radio. So I think that would be really neat, and something I'm taking some interest in.
Good evening.
Well, yeah, I think that's kind of an analog to what I was saying earlier about the search and pounce. Your search mechanism is now very different. Anything that burps or chirps on that spectrum analyzer readout is going to become the object of curiosity. And potentially, you could qualify or disqualify a blip for a period of time, so as to not get your attention, and ultimately have it auto-switch focus to you automatically. That might be an interesting concept, too, where let's say you had three or four signals, and you know there's one guy on one frequency who's just going to call CQ all night, and you just kind of just block him out, and you just let him go, and you just basically... You know, do not, you know, click on his signal and then right click on it and say ignore. And so anything within a reasonable range of that frequency is going to get ignored for, you know, some period of time. Whereas another one, you might click and say, you know, suspend for 5 minutes and see if he goes away. And that's fine. And then another is anything else that comes up, the next signal that you haven't investigated recently is going to sequentially be focus, and then you can decide by right-clicking what to do with it, whether you want to suspend or you want to continue to monitor and work the guy, or just go to the next one that on the list of signals that are in the passband. You know, you set up some sort of automatic tuning within that monitored spectrum, and let you decide how you want to dispense with it over a period of, you know, some integral time. I think it'd be kind of neat, actually. You got me thinking there, Mr. Steve. You got me thinking. So, let's see. What else do I want to do? Is there anything else I really want? Well, let's continue with this. Anything else on the subject?
Yeah, let's hear from Dave, NJ1W, because he's built that... that transmitter receiver. So what do you think of SDR, Dave?
K2BAR, this is NJ1W. You'll have to excuse me, I'm suffering from a pretty bad cold and the voice is going. Mine's still a work in progress. It's passing all the tests. I just haven't had the computer power to hook it up, or I haven't really taken the time. I haven't spent too much time on it. Though I know this guy's on the reflector that I go to. I get emails from every day, and this guy's working PSK quite regularly. You can get these things about 2 watts out on them, and they're making contacts, you know, to Europe and everything with just 2 watts on PSK. And you don't, even though you only have a 48 kilohertz window of PSK, you're pretty much confined to just one frequency, so you don't have to worry about having too much tunability. So, everyone's raving about it. I can't rave about it yet. I rave about my SoftRock 40, the first one I built, and that works just great. That's small enough I take upstairs, and I'll just hook up that little portable antenna, that little vertical antenna that I showed at last Sunday night,
voice is going now, excuse me. In the morning, say about 8 o'clock in the morning, I'll see about a half a dozen CW contacts on there. You just click on it, and you can close that filter up to about 50 hertz, and they really boom in. So I think it's great, and it's coming a lot farther, too, and they're doing more with it. Let me drop it. And the same guy keeps coming out with a new version, Tony Parks. And the prices are coming down, actually. And I don't think he's going too much farther in the transmitter end, but he's doing a lot with the receive. And you are able to hook these up to the K3, the Elecraft K3, to have an output that'll accept the IF. And they have K3s that will tone the IF frequency of the K3. So that's about all. I don't know all the details. I read them. I know everybody's working on it, but I can't retain the stuff in my memory anymore. The mind is going. The age is catching up on me. I think I'm going to drop out now, but the voice is going. I have to get a drink. K2BAR, this is NJ1W. Back to net.
It's interesting, Dave. If you can just give us one or two more words on the subject. So you're saying that there are people using computers to tune the receive, you know, demod, if you will, of the K2. That's pretty cool. And obviously the Cellfox 40. And I assume they're able to transmit with the K2 as well using the sound interface, not just for PSK31, but can you generate single sideband you know, shove it in at 90 kilohertz IF, if you will, or something of that nature? And or will there be something like that for the K3, over?
I thought I said K3. I didn't. If I said K2, I meant to say K3. So I did some reading on the Elecraft, their website, and there's a lot of questions coming in about it. And you should be able to hook up, there's an IF output or something that you should be able to run right into a software-defined radio, and one of the inexpensive ones. It doesn't have to be the 1000, the expensive one. It could be one of the little soft rocks. And that IF frequency will drive the soft rock. And I don't have any details on it, but on the Elecraft website, there's an FAQ, and there's a lot of questions and answers there. And they're looking at, they want to make everybody happy with the new K3. Back to that.
Okay, I think you did say K3, but I wasn't sure. Alrighty. Very fine. Any more on this rather interesting subject of, you know, kick-ass front ends and software-defined modulation and demodulation schemes using software technology? Any more on that? Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, WHSCAI. Request a quick UFA.
Go ahead.
Dave, you listening?
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
I got my driver's license back on Tuesday. More or less. I won't be needing a ride tomorrow. Thank you, though.
Okay, that's good. And I probably won't be going tomorrow anyway, because I don't want to spread these germs around. I got a pretty bad cold. Okay, back to that. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, gentlemen. WHSCAI.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Dave and Steve, for bringing that up. Interesting subject. Let's see. One of the things I have not been able to do is, recharacterize my coffee can antenna feed for Wi-Fi. And I do want to do that at some point. And what I'll do, I think, at this point is find a identical design using a coffee can for 2.4 and then compare it to, or even the 2.4 Wi-Fi bin, which is further up yet. And then I'll compare that to the 2.3 design I have here and make appropriate adjustments. But I do need to make I do need to get that done at some point. Is this the coffee can I handed around, like the Lupiaki, is set for 2.3 gigs, and I want to build some serious gain antennas for Wi-Fi for a couple of different purposes, including emergency operations, and also this summer we may have to bridge a wireless modem, a cellular modem, through a router to a Wi-Fi link across, you know, down a hill in our scout camp to where most of the campers will be for the 100th anniversary of scouting, which will be the Wednesday, the first Wednesday of August. Will be the anniversary of the, I think it's August 1st actually, the 100th anniversary of World Scouting, so it's very cool. And in 3 years we'll do it all over again for the anniversary of U.S. Scouting, but that's another matter. In any case, with that, I don't have any more to add. I'll take any last minute comments anyone wishes to make, and then I think we'll secure for the night. It's been very interesting. This is K2BAR. Anybody with final comments?
W2AKR receiver.
Functionality of the coffee can antenna. The frequency is a function of the diameter of the coffee can.
Part of it. The actual tuned element. The major tuned element is the length of the probe, but the polarization is set by the distance of that probe from the back of the can. Rotation of the rotation.
Okay. You know, if you want a smaller can, I might have a smaller diameter can for you, actually, a piece of copper pipe. It might be what you need to get that to operate at a higher end. But just a thought. Remind me in a few weeks, Gordon. I'll try to remember to put the pipe in the back seat of the truck. But I do want the unused piece back. I'm saving that for a future project also. WNTTT, WHCAI, we'll be clear.
That'd probably be more useful for 3300 or 5760, but those are the two bands I've never been on below 10 gigs. There are only two. I've never been on 3300, never been on 5760. So those are my next challenges once I get everything back and operational. But I'm really excited now. I've got four bands of VHF and UHF antennas up, six through 432, and the hard line is run, and everything's either in the shack or right outside the shack wall. I get for my 432 and 222, so I'm getting really excited about that. And what else? That's about it. Any other comments for the net before we secure? Okay, just a reminder that this weekend is the Scout Show down at Liberty State Park, and Barra is looking for operators. I believe that Phil Barber can arrange to give you a ticket so you don't have to wear a Scout uniform in order to get in for free. And by having a ticket, I believe you're probably in for a drawing for a flat-screen television, wall-mounted type television, very big one if I remember right. And what else? There's also the Barra Hamfest on the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend, and that's something to get excited about. And I can't wait. We'll also be testing sessions at that time. And last but not least, Monday is the 10-meter net on 28350 at 9 p.m. Tuesday is the 440 net on 443-100 repeat for the 141.3 PL in Franklin Lakes. And it's run by Andrew. Wednesday night is the 2-meter net, 146.79 repeat right here. And, of course, the TechNet on Thursday night, again next Thursday night, again at 9 o'clock here on this frequency.
I'd like to thank the Bergen County FM Association for the use of the repeaters. I'd like to thank the Almighty for the use of Spectrum.